Necesitamos convocar la voluntad política requerida. Para que el área de libre comercio africana continental finalmente se convierta en una realidad.
Lo que está en juego es la dignidad y el bienestar de los agricultores, trabajadores y empresarios de África, en particular las mujeres y los jóvenes. La promesa de libre comercio y libre circulación es prosperidad para todos los africanos, porque priorizamos la producción de bienes y servicios de valor agregado que son hechos en África.
El Tratado de Libre Comercio Africano es uno de los proyectos estrellas de la Agenda de 2063 de la Unión Africana. Adopta en 2013 como marco para la transformación socioeconómica de África en los próximos 50 años y pretende fortalecer los fragmentados mercados africanos y competir en el mundo con otros grandes bloques. Afecta a 1.200.000 personas con un Producto Interno Bruto combinado con más de 3 billones de dólares. Además de los aspectos económicos, el acuerdo pretende ser también una declaración de intenciones a nivel político para impulsar la unidad en el continente.
Juan Cáceres Troche, Hispan TV, Asunción. La noticia fue publicada por medios israelíes que señalaron a fuentes diplomáticas de alto rango para mencionar la posible intención de Paraguay y Honduras de llevar sus embajadas a Jerusalén al-Quds, al igual que planean Estados Unidos y Guatemala. Para el ex canciller paraguayo Héctor Lacoñata, tomar este paso sería un grave error a nivel internacional. Esto solo empeoraría la situación de tensión que se vive en la zona.
Sería realmente, en primer lugar, un palo a la rueda del proceso de paz que podría desarrollarse allá, y por otro lado pondría a Paraguay en confrontación directa con el derecho internacional, con las Naciones Unidas y con los 128 países que han decidido no apoyar esa medida.
La noticia surge después de la controvertida decisión del presidente estadounidense Donald Trump de declarar al-Quds como capital de Israel, una postura que recibió la condena de la Asamblea General de Naciones Unidas. El ex canciller paraguayo Jorge Lara Castro declaró a medios impresos de Asunción que no es recomendable el traslado. Figuras políticas afirman que el resultado dejaría a Paraguay con una pésima imagen internacional.
Es una muestra más de que Paraguay es un estado lacayo, es un estado que lo que busca siempre es congraciarse con los Estados Unidos. ¿Para qué? Para poder mantener en el poder no solamente a la derecha paraguaya, sino a la mafia paraguaya que responde a la derecha norteamericana.
Sobre este tema, la Cancillería de Paraguay afirma que no existe información oficial al respecto. Analistas, mientras tanto, dicen que este conflicto en esta parte del mundo encierra otros intereses geopolíticos.
La ubicación de la Palestina, allí en Medio Oriente, es algo que propicia el control de toda esa zona, ¿verdad? Un gobierno como el de los Estados Unidos necesita donde ir a hacer reposar sus aviones, por decirlo así, donde recargar combustible para seguir controlando la zona. De ahí, por ejemplo, también el conflicto con Siria, porque si llegaran a tomar Siria ya se apoderarían de todo.
El ex canciller Lacoñata cree que este polémico tema será resuelto por el próximo gobierno de Paraguay, que asume el 15 de agosto después de las elecciones generales. El tema se considera por demás delicado, por lo que debe tomarse la postura más prudente, según dijo. Juan Cáceres Troche, Hispan TV, Asunción.
Concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, del colectivo Más Voces, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Toshli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Here at Free Radio, we know that the airwaves are still dominated by corporate, white, patriarchal, capitalist culture, and we're sending a call out for women programmers who might want to get involved here at the station to apply for shows. We have a lot of openings. You can check the schedule out and see what slots are open at freakradio.org. And in the meantime, tune in, 101.1 FM in Santa Cruz.
Craftspeople, share your artistic skills and make a creative expression possible for residents in care facilities by becoming an Ageless Art Project volunteer. For further information, call 831-459-8917, extension 208, or you can email scohelamfsa@gmail.com.
This is David Rovix, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. Seize the airwaves.
And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz, at 101.3 FM, that's what you're listening to, it's the March 22nd, Thursday edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'll be talking at you for the next 2 hours, playing you lots of bits and pieces of interviews on the street, a few snatches of public speakers at the last shitty council meeting, that was last Tuesday, and, well, a little music here, a little music there, stolen from the YouTube and the Internet, and who knows what else. So don't go away, and you'll hear what you'll hear.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't.
So I usually collect stories from the establishment media, the Chronicle, the Sentinel, the Mercury News, about police interactions with the public, particularly when that involves bullets or beatings or even arrests, just to see what's going on because of, I have a propensity to do cop watching. Though, on occasion, I commend the police. I think I'll be writing out a commendation today for a Mark Eveleth, a sergeant who in the past I've attacked quite strongly for how he's treated homeless food servers on Pacific Avenue, but that was 20 years ago with activist Sean Alimi and QZ and others with their Feed the People campaign. But Mark has his good side. He's a friendly guy, and he actually helped me the other day recover a piece of lost property, or I should say misplaced property. I was recording the city council, special session of the city council, which Police Chief Andy Mills was addressing, and I left it there, and I got it back. Don't know if I want to say completely thanks to him, since it could have easily been picked up by perhaps a staff member and left at the office, and I would have picked it up the next day, and actually I got delayed a day getting it. But when the police help you to recover one way or another, even if it's not in the best way, your own property, rather than take it from you and dump it, as Parks and Rec crews and individuals have been known to do with homeless property, you want to give these people at least a certain amount of credit. So thank you, Mark, for finding my property and making it available to me. But the reason that I even mention this is because I tuned into or turned on the internet to look at stories on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and the first thing I saw was vigils planned today and tomorrow for unarmed man shot 20 times by Sacramento police. And this is from Black Lives Matter in Sacramento, according to Central Valley Indie Media. The murder of Stephen Clark was unjustified on March 18th at 9:13 p.m. Stephen was murdered, and while the police interrogated his family, the family was not told that his body was in their backyard. 4 hours later, at 1 a.m., his grandmother looked into the backyard and saw his body on the ground, shot up. Within 48 hours, Sacramento Police Department changed their story four times. First, they said he was carrying a gun. Then they said he was carrying a toolbar. Then they stated he was carrying a wrench. Lastly, they confirmed that he only had a cell phone. Per the video, Sacramento police officers shot to kill within 18 seconds of arriving on the scene. The two Sacramento police officers did not identify themselves. Stephen was gunned down with his hands up while surrendering in his own backyard. The two Sacramento police officers involved should be fired from the department for cause, and D.A. Schubert should convict them for murder. And that's a quote. I'm not quite sure who it's a quote from. Vigils seeking justice are planned for March 22nd, that's today, at Sacramento City Hall, and March 23rd at Florin and 29th Street, if you happen to be meandering up to Sacramento, near the Meadowview Light Rail Station where Stephen was murdered. And there's a lot more stories, and I haven't looked at the police video. I'm just reading the Black Lives Matter press release and urging that there be active opposition to this kind of thing. And he, of course, is an African-American guy. And I don't know the race of the people who shot him. And, in fact, they may not be so important, because whether you're white or black or brown, if you're on the police force, you're blue. And that puts you in a special privileged category, usually. Although we don't get to know the race in Santa Cruz of the citations that are issued to people in order to determine if there's any kind of prejudice happening. And the last time we looked, police seem to be doing pretty good. But they're still hiding those stats. Or perhaps hiding isn't the word. They're not presenting those stats. They'll present you with lots of stats about who was arrested for what crime, on what day, by what officer. But if you ask, if you look, say, why isn't the race mentioned, and it had been on the on previous matrixes that I've received, you get a blank stare, or, well, you don't get an answer. I didn't anyway when I was at City Council two nights ago asking that question of Andy Mills and the City Council, admittedly, under time pressure in a two-minute oral communications. Move along, which you're going to actually be hearing. I'll be playing that next. So it's really important for us to pay attention to what's going on in our community, not simply looking at the faraway abuses of police in other places and say, oh, gee, isn't that too bad? We have to keep our eyes on what's going on here. If you'd like to help to examine recent police stats, which I've gotten some of from the police department. And they've also indicated they'll make available the individual citations that they've given out. If we want to go through them one by one, that's the only way you'll find out the race or the address of the individuals who they've given citations to. And the reason this is important is because those outside, those of you who don't know, get a lot of citations. In the past, more than recently. At least that's the claim, and that seems to be the situation. In fact, police are just simply doing more of the kind of move them along, get out, even if it's raining, move them along, get going, even though there's no campground where people can go to other than one that is essentially closed and locked behind barbed wire, and you have to get on a waiting list to get into. People are being treated in that fashion still. And we need to document it, and we need to make clear what's going on so the broader community can see it and so that outside investigators can see what's going on as well. Anyway, at the last city council meeting, Chief Andy Mills was doing a full-blown presentation with a chunk of his police force in the standing in the back row, his lieutenants, his sergeants, a lot of folks in blue. And I wouldn't say they outnumbered the audience. There was an audience at about a third full in the chamber, maybe more. This was a special study session designed to look over a study done by a management group that was researching how policing in Santa Cruz could become more effective and deal with property crimes and other crimes. There wasn't really a clear distinction between or indication of how much money and time was being spent on the issues that I raise a lot on this show, which have to do with the arrest and harassment and seizure and citation of poor people outside for crimes like falling asleep, camping at night, survival. I call it survival sleeping, but it's just survival presence, the right to be in public spaces, being in a park after dark, in a community where there really is, where rents are escalating, where a significant number of homeless people come from this community and yet are treated as dogs, pariahs, and outsiders. Not always, not inevitably, but substantially, both, I have to say, often by members of the community and also by the police department itself, so much so that it bears a generalization that those outside are considered second-class citizens. And that's what goes on here. Anyway, the analysis that Mills was presenting to the city council essentially was asking for parks and rec rangers to be doing less in the parks and more in the downtown area, as I understand it, although it was a 198-page report. I probably have the numbers wrong, but it was a very long report. I looked over parts of it, didn't see the whole thing. And Mills made an hour-long presentation. He seemed to be saying some things that I agreed with, such as the fact that he feels that the police department shouldn't just be the go-to group for anyone who is complaining about a minor violation that really may be a function of, I don't think he put it this way, I want to be fair to Mills. I think this may have been the subtext. He has made it a point of making clear he's not going to enforce the sleeping ban at night. I think he made a statement later he was going to continue that policy. I was told, I wasn't in the room when that was said, but that was mentioned by someone else who was and who heard him. I kind of want to put this fairly for Mills. He wanted police department resources to be reallocated so that toward crimes of property and against the person, and if that when a person called in a call for service because they found a person sort of that they didn't like, panhandling on the corner. He didn't use these phrases either, but I'm kind of hoping I'm filling in the blanks properly. He wanted to see calls for service treated differently, not have a cop go out every time someone in a neighborhood sees a person that they're uncomfortable with. But that he, as the way he put it, he didn't dismiss these concerns, but he said they should be dealt with, kind of relocated to other agencies rather than the police, because that way the police would have more time to deal with more serious crimes. And it's really something that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I've been working with, has been saying for a long time. So can't disagree with them there. There was an oral communications period that involved discussion about the issues in the report, and unfortunately I didn't have my original speech with me, so I kind of was winging it. But I think what I said and others said at this public comment period, I guess it's called, it's not really oral communications because that's where you can actually talk about whatever you want, but here you had to really limit yourself to the topic at hand, which was this report by Mills, which is going to result in some... It's not clear if it's going to require City Council action to change this, or whether the City Council, in essence, has kind of given him the go-ahead to proceed. I mean, given the fact that there was such a radical and significant shift in the policy of Mills and Garcia, the head of Parks and Rec, and Martin Bernal, who oversees both of them, regarding homeless sleeping and camping at night and the ability to be in parks after dark, that was not specifically authorized by the City Council or any legislative body, but simply came into being through Mills' pronouncements, his decision to do that. And I've expressed both my support for the policy, but my anxiety as to how it came about, because what you really have is a police state. You have a police official making decisions for the community. And I think they're the right decisions. I think they're long overdue decisions. But I'm not a fan of the benevolent dictator approach. And who knows, maybe I'll be changing my mind. But it worries me. Anyway, let's hear some of the public comment that came after about an hour of Mills' presentation, which, by the way, you can find online at the city's website if you're interested. It's been put up pretty promptly. Hats off to the staff that did this. And here's some of it.
I'd like to make this opportunity to open up to the public for comment. And the first speaker is a representative of HUF who wanted to take some additional time. So you have 4 minutes, Mr. Norse. And then anyone else who wishes to speak on this matter, please line up to my left. And we'll allow you to begin. So, Mr. Norse, you have the floor.
Members of the community, Mayor, City Council, Chief Mills, first of all, David Silva, I'm sure if he could be here today, would like to maybe join in some of my comments, maybe make some different ones. As most of you may know, he died about a week and a half ago in Maputo, Mozambique, probably of pneumonia, and he was buried there a few days ago. The problem with this report for me is what it doesn't say. Although I'll talk a bit about what it does say and my concerns about that. I mean, I'm really speaking to people who want to see some fundamental changes in how the priorities of mass incarceration, policing, the drug war, treatment of the homeless take place, not sort of, you know, shifting around the deck chairs or even making substantive changes in a focus, which is not necessarily bad. But if you have criminalization of the homeless as a priority, this is the group I'm concerned about, then no matter how you change it, you don't really change it at all. Folks outside who were forced away from the San Lorenzo campground by its closing on February 28th, who had no real place to go, the East River Street campground, that is to say the barbed wire locked boneyard campground with fewer spaces that are where tents are shoved cheek by jowl with each other, and you can't leave freely, is not in any way equivalent to the even replacing what the San Lorenzo campground provided. So if you're then going to go after people with increased citations masquerading as the census, or doing this more intensely than before, you're simply reverting to the old policies. I asked Andy, who has been occasionally responsive to my questions, not always, and not recently really, but a number of questions. We had a dialogue. Huge amounts of money have come from this council and prior councils and have gone into harassing the poor through the ordinances that you have created. Will the money you save by cutting back on massive infraction enforcement of sleeping ban and nighttime park bans go into real social services? Or we hear more, oh, I wonder why the county isn't helping us with this kind of stuff, as we usually do. Drug war money. The asset seizure money is being used by the police department, Andy writes me. Why is that? I thought we're beyond this asset seizure stuff. You know, you can use all kinds of rhetoric. This is a lawful byproduct of criminal activity. There's nothing about that in this report. How much money has been seized from folks accused of what crimes? What are the records here? Now, as of use of force, which was discussed here, and it's good to hear that people are interested in knowing when are the police doing the chokeholds, the tasers, the drawing of the baton, the drawing of the weapon. These are important issues, but the public doesn't really get to know about this. I asked Andy for stats on this. He didn't give me specifics about when these things were done. And this is discretionary. The police department decides to keep these stats under wraps. So I don't see any of this changing either. What about the issues of, well, quality of life downtown? That means, of course, don't sit next to my business even if it's closed. If you're sitting outside a closed store like Alpha Graphics and three individuals were doing in the rain about a week ago, you'll get forced out into the rain by police officers from Andy's police force. Or at least that was their account. And I don't necessarily discount it. We have the unconstitutional stay-away laws. Will they continue to be enforced? And I see that I'm out of time already.
Do you want to finish your sentence?
I need to finish more than that.
You can just hand it out and we'll be happy to take a look at it. Next speaker.
I need to send it in to you.
Hello. My name is Jane Becker. I have lived and worked in Santa Cruz for 35 years. What has struck me about what is going on with the Public Safety Committee and City Council is that no one seems to really be addressing what is the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is the fact that we have over 1,000 homeless people in Santa Cruz, people that come with no money, no savings, no place to live, no job.
And, of course, this ignores, and Keith McHenry, one of the speakers that follows, will be pointing out the real stats, which is that a very significant number of people who are outside were originally from here. So they didn't come here. They were forced out by rents and by the closing of the jobs and so forth. And I'm sure that those in privileged positions or of that frame of mind may still say, well, it doesn't matter. You got to go somewhere where you can afford to live, so get the hell out of town, even though you were born here, even though all your relations may be here, even though all your connections may be here. If you can't pay for the expensive rents and pay for the taxes and pay for what is now considered the necessary standard, get out. But the claim that people are just coming here to suck off the wonderful services in Santa Cruz is such a falsification and such a distortion of reality. And it's used so frequently by opponents of basic civil rights for poor people that I interrupt. I probably interrupt unnecessarily because I think regular listeners know that this is simply the cry of the bigot or the misguided, misinformed person. Let's hear more.
And they appear to live on the streets. Many of them are doing drugs, and as much as I feel for these people, the reality is that many of these people are stealing to support habits. They're breaking into cars. They're stealing bikes and shopping the parts. They are committing home burglaries. They are walking into businesses. I see this downtown quite a bit, and taking what they want to take and leaving. What I'm going to suggest is that the city make a shift from anybody that wants to come here can come here, to if you come here with no money, no job, no place to live, we will give you immediate food, attention to any immediate medical condition, and the next question is, how do we get you home? How do we get you bus fare? How do we get you airfare? There is no housing here for you, not realistically. There are very few jobs here. Santa Cruz is not a place just to come just to hang out, because you're going to be living on the streets. We need to have at a shift says this is where we stop as a town. And then perhaps we will see the lessening of service calls to the police, because we've eliminated a source, a causation of crime. Thank you.
Fearing the homeless.
Next speaker, please.
And, of course, the reason there's so many calls for service are because people like her don't even like the visible reality of homeless people and are blaming them for lots of problems that have developed as a function of rents, as a function of job flight, and certainly as a function of poor people, some of them stealing what they need to steal, because they didn't come here to steal. They found themselves here in these situations, and they do what they need to do. But again, to make these claims without getting specific about your experiences, to me, tends to mean, just as you shouldn't believe what I say unless you question me closely about on what basis I say what I'm saying, so it is with this person. Oh, she saw a number of people who were stealing stuff from stores. How many times? How recently? How many people did you see that weren't doing this? Or that, you know, it's to even address it seriously is probably a mistake, and I just get cranky when I hear it. So let's hear some more.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. It was very informative.
This is Grant Wilson.
All the work that was put into it.
An activist at one time.
Maybe four questions and maybe one observation. You know much more than I do, and maybe most of you do, but I know in some communities there's non-emergency number is a 411 number that people can call, which seems like a very simple way, and that may not be possible here, I don't know, but that seems like that could be a possible, easy fix to the police department getting, or 911 getting, having to field a lot more calls than they are. So I guess I just have a question regarding that. I don't know if there's been any consideration, again, just cost and expense reduction and increased community policing in terms of having more police on bicycles. Santa Cruz, I've been here since the late 70s, and probably like 15 years ago, it seemed like we did have a number of police on bikes, but it doesn't seem like that's happening much. And I see police on ATVs and that type of thing, but that's not, it's hard to talk to somebody when the ATV is running and they've got the helmet on and it's the whole nine yards. So that's just another question of mine. I know you said in your presentation that I don't know how many community forums you had in different parts of Santa Cruz. I was curious if there was any community forum in Beach Flats, whether there was, did you have, I feel like, I guess, because you said, as part of that, you said that each community sort of forum told you what the issue was, which is theft. I guess my concern is that isn't the whole community. Those are people who feel comfortable coming to community forum with the police. There are people who don't feel comfortable with that. You know, it's a problem, and you know that. but I feel like if the only people you're responding to are the people that come to the forum, that's not the entire community.
Thanks, Grant.
Okay, I have one last thing to
just,
okay, I will, thank you. And I noticed, and this is just a broader question, but I noticed that often when we have these things, at the moment there's seven uniformed officers here. I never know when that's going on. Are those officers on pay right now? They're in uniform, so there's uniformed officers and staff here from the police department. So that's another question. So those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any member of the public who would like to speak on this after the report prior to moving back to council? Okay, sir, you're up next.
Hi, guys. My name is Gary Taylor. I've been living in Santa Cruz County for 30 years. My name is Gary Taylor. I've been living in the county for about 30 years. I got into an automobile accident about 2 years ago. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit of background. I was homeless in this city for about a year, almost a year and a half. So I know what it's like out there. I know exactly what it's like. I also, without any help, no one, got out of it. I worked. It took a lot of hard work. And I have some suggestions that you guys might be interested in. I don't really know. I'm not familiar with the way the system works. You might see me in the future here. I hope you do. Anyone that has any advice or like to talk to me, please do. Anyone that wants to help me out or give me advice, you know, the procedures and policies, how things work, totally open to that. Please do let me know. And out in the streets, there's a lot of violence going around, people stealing people's things. I think that anyone, hold on, nervous, excuse me. Anyone that has the motivation to get up and get a job and get themselves out of the situation, I think we should provide some resources so they can do that. You know, the easiest way is to not look at the homeless population as all the same, but see the ones that got put there by a situation that are working to get out of it, and the ones that are just kind of idling, stealing, and, you know, drug use. I know that one issue I had, I lost multiple jobs over this, was a place to put my things when I got up to go to work, where there would be when I could come back, to have clothing, to have shelter, to have warmth.
And this, of course, was something that was directly impacted by the city manager's decision to shut off Brent Adams' proposed December program to provide a shelter area, which would have been where the Boneyard campground is now. That's where he was going to store stuff. It's not really the most convenient place to get to, but that's what he was offered, and that's what he was had prepared to set up. But there was no winter storage area because instead they were creating this so-called substitute temporary campground in order, of course, to give a reason to clear the San Lorenzo campground, which was had much more space, much more free access, but was also much more visible and caused a lot more growls of outrage and also cut into some commercial activity for those groups that wanted to use the campground for other activities. Though that could have been done in other places, that is to say, the commercial activity could have been done in other places. And because when you have a question of survival versus commerce, it seems to me pretty clear what the priority should be. In any case, the guilty people were right there in front of them. They're the city manager and, of course, the city council, which can direct the city manager as to what to do. It was the city manager who refused to essentially cut short the storage program that this guy could have used and hundreds of others could have used as well.
To have heights. These are things you have to have to succeed. Other than that, you need communication. You must have. There's challenges there. Businesses don't want you in their business not spending any money and charging your phone. You can't even get your phone on. You could have 10 people calling you to give you a job, and you can't get on your phone. But they're people, too. Where are they going to charge your phone at? Where are they? You know? It's not a huge deal. You know, one little idea I have, I'm just going to run it by you. I'm not very organized. Shoot.
Can you just wrap it up and say your last sentence, please?
Yeah, the two ideas that basically I have is one of them is a day storage, where people that are motivated can come to store the things for the day, so they can progress and get out of there and not be homeless anymore. The other is an outdoor, low-budget structure where qualified homeless can enter to live. And, yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate you being here. Yeah, you want to put
you.
Your name and write down?
I did. Left name and number.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Greg, for speaking.
This is Keith McHenry, moving right along as Move 'Em Along, Dave Teresis, the mayor, moves us all along.
And I'm sure you don't need to hear this, but many of the people living on the street were born and raised here or lived here for decades, and it's not actually statistically, according to a point in time survey, magnet for people living on the streets. And whenever I offer a free bus ticket out of here, the response is usually, I was born here. I don't need a free bus ticket home. The thing that I found most interesting in the presentation was the unusual drop in property crimes in 2008. And I think that highlights what our definition of property crimes, because we know that the that was the year of the most property crimes. But those property crimes were actually committed by Wells Fargo, Chase, Bank of America, where they stole literally dozens and dozens of people that I personally know their homes. And so there is a direct correlation between the lack of enforcement against the theft of our community by bankers and outside interests that come here and steal people's property, and the amount of people living on the streets.
And of course, not only that, but those of us who protested this at the Occupy movement in the fall of 2011, 3 years after the 2008 foreclosure depths and fraud that was massive, and destruction of people's careers, lives, their lives and their careers, and also the loss of their homes. We occupied, and I say we because I certainly was there in spirit, and I was there reporting it. I wasn't one of the people who planned it, and I wasn't one of the people who sustained it, but I certainly reported on it regularly, the occupation of the 75 River Street, leased empty, and still empty, I guess the county bank is going in there now, building, which was done to highlight the fact that Wells Fargo, the bank leasing the building but essentially not having done anything with it, was ripping off people around the country and also around the city with all kinds of frauds that are still going on today. You can still find it in the financial sections of the papers, what they're doing, and they're beginning to suffer some minor penalties for it, but no one's in jail from Wells Fargo because of it that I'm aware of, whereas the Santa Cruz police are quite vigorous about jailing people for the petty crimes. That is to say, you're far more likely to find yourself in a problematic situation there. I mean, much more likely than if you're a well-to-do person. So those who even protested this were not simply ignored. They were prosecuted. That's what the Santa Cruz 11 prosecutions were all about. There were 11 of us who were prosecuted for having gone into that bank building and charged with felonies and misdemeanors for having just walked into a Wells Fargo leased bank, a bank being leased by essentially a criminal corporation that has never been held accountable. And instead of the city going after that corporation and trying to protect people who were victimized by the corporation, they went after those who exposed it. They went after the whistleblowers. Now, this is nothing new, but it has to be realized by the community, I think, for us to begin to decide what to do next realistically to deal with real crime. And Keith McHenry wasn't in Santa Cruz at that time, but I suspect he would agree with me.
Because a lot of people who had a place to live, but the bank stole their landlord's house, and now they live outside. And you know many of those people, too. You probably are your friends. So I think the definition of crime is one of the issues that we could face as a community. And there's a well-respected professor named Alex Vitale, who he gave a presentation about his book in Wales about 3 days ago. And his book is called The End of Policing, and he has done decades of research in changing the policing ideas and how it impacts the community. And I certainly encourage you to invite him to come here and speak. Thank you.
Thank you. This is the final speaker, unless someone else steps up. So final speaker, and we'll bring back to council.
Thank you, Mayor and council members and Chief Mills. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the the ongoing work that you and your department have been doing to meet with a variety of community members, and kind of I see it as sort of coming out of some sort of a shell. So I'm wondering and hoping that this is going to bring a lot of reassurance to the community, that you're accessible, that you're easy to talk to. It felt, in my experience, that maybe the prior police department was meeting with a couple community groups and not a wide variety of people. And something that you said, sort of setting your department up to fail, it sort of resonated with me, is I'm wondering if referring to your officers as heroes, and I have love for the Santa Cruz Police Department. My uncle was a police officer 100 years ago, but I think that could possibly set up the community for disappointment, because maybe they're also expecting that. And I personally like to have coffee with a real person. I want to have a beer with a police officer. I want to really relate to them on a one-on-one level. And I don't want to have you feel like you have to be my rescue or my hero. And I'm just wondering if that's sort of a cultural misunderstanding.
Of course, what's really happening, I think, with police often is that they really drape themselves in their roles. And this is easy to do because it's part of the mythology of policing that we learn as children, or at least I did when I was a kid. I don't know, maybe probably less that this way today, at least less consistently the case that children are given the view that, I know that I wanted to grow up to be a cop when I was a kid. I thought these were heroes. In fact, of course, I've come to understand that really it's quite the opposite, that good human beings are deformed by a police department because of the priorities that the police department have in enforcing class legislation as a really primary part of their job. And I'm afraid that a lot of what Mills has been doing is fluff and puff. I mean, I'm not aware that he has taken a lot of ideas from the community and incorporated them into any kind of become a voice for the community. I think he's done ostensible outreach, and I haven't gone to those four sessions that he went to. I just went to this one 2 days ago. But I'm not aware that he's taken and run with anything that community people have publicly proposed. I suppose you could say he took the Huff proposal for at least ending or ameliorating the sleeping ban and ran with it, but I don't think that's really how and why his current policy of lessened, if not gone, enforcement, at least non-existent enforcement of the sleeping ban at night is happening. I think it has to do with, again, reallocating resources to deal with other crimes and recognizing that homeless people are not the primary criminal problem at all that the police department can really address. And that's something, of course, that is coming out as part of this discussion and this dialogue. But again, I don't think it's coming from the grassroots. I don't think it's happening because he's having these wonderful meetings with people. I think it's something he's decided to do and is imposing from the top down, which I happen to agree that I think that's the right policy. And let's hear what... I don't know who this woman is, but I don't want to cut her off too much.
Could be addressed. I really appreciate your addressing some of the complex issues that feed crime, like the economic disparity that we're experiencing, public health crises, climate, weather, freeway interchanges. It's all very complex. It's not as simple as we sometimes like to think. And lifting a variety of people up in the community that aren't in this room would do us all a lot better. And I really appreciate you mentioning that. And just in closing, I'd like to say that the website is amazing. There's so much more information for people that can't meet with you or can't come to a meeting. I look forward to seeing stop data. I look forward to seeing more information from the Rangers. I look forward to seeing that the Rangers are getting some de-escalation training because they're dealing with, you know, a troubled population that needs assistance. And I just want to thank you, and I want to thank all the officers here in this room that I find very accessible and easy to talk to. And let's continue to build relationships in the community and hopefully ease some of the balloon that you feel is sort of expanding.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. She'll be the final speaker unless the person in the back room standing wants to speak. This is the final speaker in the evening.
Good evening, Damon Bruder, a concerned citizen. thank you, Chief Mills, for being here. I've heard through the grapevine, you know, the rumblings underground that your officers are upsetting people because your officers are starting to do their job. These are law-abiding people, or generally law-abiding people that have gotten tickets for various things. Yay, I'm glad. If I deserve a ticket, write one to me. If anybody deserves a ticket, write one. Catch and release, I know that's the situation right now. Your hands are tied. Please keep catching. As far as the release part, well, that's up to the laws that govern the judges. There is an initiative going around right now, the Keep California Safe Initiative. It closes the loopholes in Prop 47 and 57 to help you do your job. If you want to sign that petition or hear about it, see my wife after the meeting. And I do want to applaud the Rangers and the SCPD for the way that they handle situations that could quickly escalate. I saw a situation on Pacific Avenue last week where a Ranger talked to a gentleman and actually ended up getting him, at that moment, a bus ticket home to San Francisco to get out of here because that's what he wanted, even though the person was fun to deal with. The Rangers, they handled it very professionally and very patiently. And, you know, that's what I see when I see the Rangers and I see the SCPD. When they deal with people like that, they deal with them compassionately, professionally, and patiently. And I thank you for that.
Thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity to open up to the public.
And what's interesting at this meeting, the part of it that I attended on Tuesday night, was the lack of the kind of harsh criticism that Mills is getting from Take Back Santa Cruz-minded people on the right. And you can find this if you go to Jessica York's story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or almost any story written about the homeless in the San Lorenzo, when they were in the San Lorenzo campground and currently in the River Street campground, just of very scathing, snarling attacks, sarcastic attacks on Mills' policy of not enforcing the sleeping ban at night on public property when there's no other problem. And that, what I found surprising was that none of those folks were speaking, really. I mean, there was the one woman who spoke about the homeless as criminals who come to town to use drugs and hang out on the streets, and they should be given, you know, a meal and a ticket to get them back to their homes, wherever these homeless people came from. But she was the only one, and there was no real criticism of Mills. And I found myself thinking about this and wondering, at least no public criticism at these meetings. Maybe I've missed it because I haven't been going to every city council meeting. But I'm wondering if that has to do with the fact that people on the right find it difficult to criticize those icons of heroism and glory in blue, because it's part of their sort of... there's a whole system of, I don't want to call it police worship, but it tends in that direction. And you can hear it in the suggestions of some of the speakers. Let's get a little musical now, having heard a lot of chatter. And then we'll come back to hear more chatter.
And welcome back to the first presidential debate. Mr. Trump, let's get back to what you were saying about Secretary Clinton's makeup. You mentioned she's been a little heavy on the eyeliner lately.
Is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy. It's very important to me. But in all fairness to Secretary Clinton, she's been doing this for 30 years.
Sweetie, do you need a tissue?
What's happened to our jobs and our country and our economy generally is, look, we owe $20 trillion. We cannot do it any longer. I am very underleveraged. I have a great company. I have a tremendous income. And the reason I say that is not in a braggadocious way. It's because...
Braggadocious? Is that even a word?
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
Super callous, fragile, egocentric, braggadocious, likes to throw big words around and hopes that we all notice. If he keeps repeating them, they might just make him POTUS. Super careless, fragile, ego, extra braggadocious. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? 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 He says that he's the man and thinks he's got the Midas touch. But does he have a plan to fix the country?
Not so much.
And if you're not convinced by all of that hyperbole, he says shut up, just buy a stupid but hadn't, vote for me. Hey, super careless, fragile, that's why Hillary's relaxed. It's time Bill Clinton might as well sit back and play the sad kid. Wife erased her emails and now Trump wants total access. Then once hell has frozen over, he'll release his taxes. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? 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 He found a word that sounded smart and used it all day long. But even Webster's dictionary said he got it wrong. So if you're undecided or you hate the other sex, remember in November how he likes to sign his checks. It's super sleazy, fabricating, sexist, and obnoxious. Even just the thought of voting for him makes me nauseous. If you like America, you'll keep him out of office. Superficial, chauvinistic, arrogant, and thoughtless. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? Who the hell's gonna vote for this guy? Of course, you can say it backwards, which is docious, brag, eccentric, ego, fragile, and stupid.
Did you ask me a question?
Nope, I didn't say anything.
So when his words escape him and he hasn't got a prayer, he's feeling kind of dizzy because he sucks up all that air. He better keep his guard up because she might take a swing.
And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And I think that's a good thing.
Wait a minute. Did you just hand him his ass and quote Martha Stewart? Yes, bitch. Excuse me. I mean, secretary bitch.
Super calculated, adolescent, braggadocious. If you hate both nominees, remember he's the grossest. Meanwhile, look at Jill and Gary sipping on mimosas. Super callous, fragile, egocentric, braggadocious.
I think I did a good job.
Super callous, fragile, egocentric, braggadocious.
Okay, you need to stop that.
And that was Randy Rainbow, braggadocious, from, gosh, a year and a half ago. If you overlook his Clintonophilia, oh, maybe it's a little strong. His attacks on the other minority candidates, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, and of course his prediction that went wrong, that Clinton was sure to win and she had nothing to worry about because Trump is such an ass. Again, it's that kind of thinking that I think got us where we are. Although I've talked a lot about Clinton, and I've talked a lot about how it's really a situation where it's the two parties that are the problem, that these candidates are simply fronts for essentially the same interests that run counter to those of the rest of us. And it's just ridiculous that we keep getting distracted by this sideshow. I have criticisms as well of even third-party candidates, because the whole system, the whole hierarchical authoritarian system, seems to me to be creates its own monsters and creates a monstrous situation for the community under the guise of some kind of democratic system. It's just not the way it is. But let's hear some more voices other than mine.
Yeah, you probably don't want to hear what I have to say.
It's Ricardo Lopez.
Because what I said to him was...
It's March 18th.
Yeah, I said, hey, you sure do have a law. He starts quoting what the law is about how close you can be to the river. And I said, you know what? I said, there's a whole bunch of this stuff about the sex industry that's illegal. Why don't you go out there and arrest them and quit fucking... Not that I want them arrested at all, but I said it to him. I said, are you guys on the take? He goes, oh, boy, you have an imagination. And he said it just like a shill, like those Norteños and Sereños and Hell's Angels told him what to say. Like that. I'll bet if we put not that I want them arrested. I don't want none of the sex workers harassed. That's another reason I don't want to say. But to him and just us that down there, saying what's up with
What about tickets, Ricardo, and harassment?
They're not giving tickets because they are harassing.
And what Ricardo is talking about is what he often discusses, and we're talking at a Food Not Bombs feeding. I think it was last Sunday. Folks living down along the San Lorenzo riverbank, illegally, of course. There's really very few places in Santa Cruz you can't live unless you're living illegally if you're outside. And he's concerned about the kind of misappropriation of force and power against people who have no alternatives and no options, but who still continue to be treated like bags of trash.
or they come up and say, where are you from? Because he's got a slight accent, Latin accent when he speaks English. He says, Los Angeles. He said, go back to L.A. And he just said, excuse me, sir, can I help? You know, let's face it. These are racist, ignorant pigs. Why do I call them pigs? Because I'm showing them the respect
cops
they deserve.
Or rangers are we talking
They're all, a bunch of them are all pigs, you know. They're not like first responders. They're like that guy, they're all like that guy who hid back to see what was happening. You know, he's got a gun talking all big until the firing starts, and then they're hiding.
What do you hear about property seizures, Ricardo? If anything.
All the time. They go in, they take your property, consider it trash, say, oh, we threw that away. Nobody holds it for a minute like they're supposed to. You know, they,
last time this happened that you know of in the last few days?
A week ago, they walked up, took all of my stuff while I walked up here to get some food. It was last week. I came up to get some food. I walked back down. That's why I dogged that stupid motorcycle rookie. He's a rookie to the bridge. I guess he's somewhere else. He starts to give us this holier-than-thou lecture. I just brought him right down to reality because he's going out there to the, like everybody else, and then he's pretending like he's so, you know, it's not, if he's going to be a stickler about us being too close to the river, you know, he needs to, I bet if we put a private dick on him, we'd find him just like that with his girlfriend, hanging out, listening to the music, smoking a joint, or rolling a pizzo.
Did you request to get your property back from any of these folks?
All the time. They'll say, oh, we don't even know if we have it, and stuff like that. You know, what, bring me your ticket. I didn't have a ticket. Well, how do we know it was taken? You know, on and on. You know, it's just like a... plus, I'm going to get stuff... Yeah. That freaking... Yeah. It's awesome. It's stupid. Yeah, the one that told you to go back to L.A.? Fuck that pig. What the hell? You know, here's the thing. People are paying for that. For that kind of... do they really want them to come out and abuse people and make them think, oh yeah, we just sent this person to abuse you, you know? Or do they want somebody to, they want people to integrate themselves into the community. And you know, when you say, oh well, all of you people go over there and do that because they're people like you, what do you mean? Because they have fit my income bracket? You know, why don't you guys keep the jobs here in the United States instead of voting for people who beat on a blow a horn and wave the flag and send the jobs to China?
Now, let me ask you, Ricardo, it's not a rainy day today, but it has been raining on a number of days. What's happening with folks whose tents are up now that the San Lorenzo campground has been dispersed and there's only a limited number of spots at the River Street campground?
Okay. These guys come up. If they had the authority, one guy says, we're going to build a fence around this so you guys can't come down here and we'll arrest you. You know, they're not paying attention. We know the river better. When that river rises, it'll wash any damn fence away, and they can build as many as they want, and it'll wash it away. It won't just stay there. And the water go through there. There'll be a big log that comes up and knocks it down. So what he's saying is stupid. We know how that river gets. We get chased out of there when it rains and fills to the top.
Now, are you able to use a tent yourself, or do you have friends who are using tents without being molested?
No, they get harassed. It's just that... one of the important, and these guys are, I tell them, look, you're not going to take 10 bums, with, I'll put it like that, with all of our stuff into a facility where they're sending prisoners from the state penal, you know, the penitentiaries. They're sending prisoners from there to stay here. You can stay 11 years right there. You can do 11 years in county on a prison. Right, that's what they want, is you to bring a whole bunch of bums in to have us all run out and then let go as soon as they can. That's all they're going to do. They don't want to put us up to sleep. They're packed.
Have you heard any reports from the River Street campground itself, the barbed wire boneyard encampment?
I've heard that a bunch of people were arrested out there in the FEMA camp, as we call it. And we're saying, God, it's so obvious. They're just trying to fence them in. They ran tickets, and you're not safe. It would be like if every time you went home, you had to have all of your tickets fixed, or you were going to be arrested and taken to jail. Every time, as soon as you got home, you got searched. They're doing it to make it fuck up so they can say, oh, we tried. We, you know, nobody wants to be treated in.
When did you hear about these arrests, and do you know when they happened?
I don't. But the point is, if that's the rumor that's going around, you see what I'm saying? And, yeah.
How's the food, by the way?
This food is great.
What it looks like? It looks like granola, actually.
It's the bomb. It's It's their version of bread pudding, which is really, it's not just white bread or something.
Not bad.
It's, and all the stuff from the Little Valley, these outstanding strawberries mixed in there. We're in a lucky place. The Little Valley is really, really, really verdant. It produces great fruit, and we get it right here through the, and the, I've got to have another thing, say another thing. When India Joe is an awesome human being, and all of those, that organization, how they step up for us every week without fail. For people who are that successful, that well off, to think about others like that and to put out an effort, and he puts his some back into it, even when he comes over and does cooking and works just like any grunt in his, yeah, I mean, he's a special person, and they're all special people to, I mean, it's fantastic what they do.
And we have been talking with
Ricardo Lopez.
Any final words, Ricardo?
Yeah, come on out and help support the music and the art on the avenue, and let's bring the art and the music back out. Wasn't it better when we had those pretty co-eds out there who are badass artists and really, really intelligent, talking to us and putting their art out, and all the people singing again? Look what your city council has done. Look at that dead street. That's your city council with their stupid little squares.
Thank you, Ricardo. Keith McHenry, you're manning or staffing the table of literature.
Well, yes, I am over here.
All alone, and I see, as usual, there's no Huff literature here.
Yeah,
a sad day, I must
people
say.
People from Huff, they just don't bring me any literature anymore.
Those people, they've forgotten about you and your needs and the needs of the homeless community. I see you have a bin of old street spirits over there.
What to get people to take them and sell them, but people don't want them.
Nobody wants them now. It's a sad day.
What I do is I put them in newspaper racks around town.
Does that work? Or do people just throw them away? You come by then?
No, actually, an interesting time. What gave me the idea is I did it once at Staff of Life, and Richard, one of the owners, was sitting there just going through it, like, reading it. And
you actually got him to get literate?
He's literate. I thought that was like, wow, if he's into it, that maybe others are.
So, now, of course, we are talking with
Keith with Food Not Bombs.
And Keith, you look like you're... Before we go on with that, just quickly, if you want to get Street Spirit, the new issues of February and March are out. That's the homeless newspaper, which you can sell if you're a low-income or outside person. And I think it usually goes now for $2 rather than $1. And you can, you know, sometimes make enough for a couple cups of coffee. And as well as there's often a story from Santa Cruz in it. Steve Plaich is regularly featured, and a lot of stuff from the Bay Area. If you want copies of this paper, you can go to the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific. Or you can get in touch with me on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Or you can, I don't know, if you know what I look like, if you know what my sticker-covered car looks like, you can accost me downtown when you see me, and I will pass some on to you. You're moving slowly but surely. How is your recovery, or is there a recovery happening?
There is a recovery, but it is slow. And today was, last couple of days have been hard in the kitchen. I need definitely somebody to bottom line the cooking, because
people who want to bottom line should show up on Saturday noon?
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday's noon at India Joe's, 418 Front Street. And
what kind of skills do they need to do help?
Well, they have to, if something I'm willing to teach, they would want to, you have to look at a big pile of food, of raw, uncooked food, and figure out how to make it into a meal for 150 people.
Well, we did get a thumbs up from Ricardo Lopez for your strawberry bread pudding.
Oh, yeah, I got a lot of thumbs up for that. We decided to do oatmeal today because we have a lot of oatmeal. So, we did oatmeal, and I have this. I make like a whole mixture of stuff, but the spices are cinnamon, cloves, and ginger. And
I tasted it myself. Usually, of course, I shy away preferring filet mignon to the Food Not Bombs menu.
Oh, yeah.
However, on this occasion, I did venture to have a mouthful, and I wasn't totally nauseated or disgusted.
Yeah, well, I've been getting a lot of rave reviews the last few months, so it's been good. Hey, Kyle. And so that's we've had pretty high standards for our food, and it's kind of, it's very beautiful how many people are just hanging around talking. It's like a party. This is exactly what
overcast of the day may be.
Yeah, even though people just don't leave, they just hang and talk. And welcome to Food Not Bombs. You know about our work?
Can you tell me the Bank of America? Oh, it's over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
I would recommend against the Bank of America.
Yeah, you would, huh?
Yes.
Are they doing some things that aren't good?
They have been for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they burned one down in Santa Barbara.
I know that I lived in Reading for a little while, and they're charging like, here's what they do. I would put my ATM in, and it would, let's say I was like over by 35 cents. It would still let me buy it, but then it would charge me $35. Charge.
Well, a little extra charge, yeah, for you, of course. And yet you're still a patron. I was a Bank of America patron until the Occupy movement. Then I moved my stuff to another, but who knows? The bank might be just as bad, but it wasn't as big. So.
But they stopped doing it. Funny enough, people complain, you know.
Yeah. All right, we'll pass your words on.
Yeah, I remember Wells Fargo got sued for doing that.
Wells Fargo is still in the financial pages almost every day for supposedly mismanaging funds. I wish I were better, you know, educated on how to describe the adventures of Wells Fargo, and also its depredations in this community. I mean, one thing that we lost in the Occupy movement here was we never followed the activities of Wells Fargo and what they were doing here in Santa Cruz. I mean, there were a few foreclosures that got focused on. You were not around during the Occupy movement here, right?
No, but I was here shortly after, and I did write an article about what I could find about. In fact, one of the most shocking things was a man who built his own house and designed it in Aptos, and just before he was fixing up his RV to leave and ended up shooting himself to death in the RV, and then his wife, apparently, according to the news article I was using for research, said that they got a form letter. It's apparently enough people commit suicide during foreclosure that they send the survivors a form letter.
This was local in Santa Cruz or else?
Aptos, yeah.
So, George, you may remember. Was there much specifics about Wells Fargo's depredations in Santa Cruz that we were able to uncover, and some of us doing the Occupy research? And I know, obviously, we did occupy one of their leased buildings, and that was mixed results for sure. But what about the general scene with Wells Fargo? Do you have any sense of that, whether there was foreclosures that happened that they were responsible for? Was there much withdrawal from Wells Fargo because of the Occupy movement here in Santa Cruz?
We marched on Wells Fargo a lot, and Wells Fargo, of course, was convicted or settled with the state attorney general for robo-signing.
Right, but this was independently of what we were doing, right?
That was independent of what we were doing.
I mean, maybe it wasn't. Maybe we were able to prompt that, I suppose. But you don't. I thought a couple of the houses were being foreclosed on, but I don't know if that was Wells Fargo or not. I know there was an occupation of a couple of houses, one of them up on Mission Street.
I don't know whether the Mission Street house is Wells Fargo. It was definitely a bank. Wells Fargo bought. We had across the street here, there was World Savings, which became Wachovia, which was then bought by Wells Fargo.
Now we got Bank of the West.
Yeah, and it was a lot of the World Savings loans were all frauds and robo-signed too, and so that became part of Wells Fargo's fraudulent portfolio. Now the current 75 River Street has a sign saying it's being remodeled and is going to be the future home of County Bank.
Do we know much about County Bank? Do you know much about County Bank?
No, I know nothing about County Bank.
I know nothing either.
It has the old Crocker building right now that's next to, you know, Kinko's or Woodstock Pizza.
So you're a resident downtown.
Yes.
What do you have observed in the last year, if anything, about the street life on Pacific Avenue? Do you notice any changes, anything you want to comment on?
Well, there's a lot more homeless people, but they are sort of like were shoved away by the police. And I see them sleeping in doorways less, even though there seem to be more of them. They just sleep further away from downtown.
What do you see during the daytime? Are there many? There's still occasionally performers in front of the Palomar at night. I notice Ricardo and various other people, Jay sometimes, are performing there. What do you see during the day on Pacific Avenue?
It seems the same to me.
Those stickers?
I think it's for donation, but the more you can pass on, the better, you know. But don't, you know, if you can't pass on anything, take a sticker, you know.
And I'll put on something.
I've never owned your sticker.
And we've been talking with
George.
Thanks, George. With
Sean.
And Sean?
Yeah.
You've been here for, you say, about 2 months?
Yeah, it's about one quarter. Yeah, you see, I see quarter, so it's about 2 months, I guess.
And how many times have you been working with Food Nabam?
Times? I would say like 8-9 times.
And yeah. What's been your experience, or has it changed your viewpoint of anything, and or broadened your understanding of anything? Have you learned anything here?
I think in my mind I know what I learned, but I might not be able to express it out because my language is pretty bad. Uh-huh. What I feel most like is about like food injustice. You know, people have all the right to get the safety food, all kinds of food, while some others don't have the right. We are trying to create the equalities.
That's equality. From,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I learned actually a lot. I've never been touched with United Society so deep. I always like study by myself. Never touched with all the people here before. So
you find yourself in more connection with people.
Yeah, connected.
Has
it
affected your life in other arenas, like back up at the university, or has it changed how you relate to people at all?
I think yes, but I honestly don't know how to say it out. I think yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I appreciate that. This will be on Free Radio probably on Thursday. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You do fine. And we've been talking with?
Sean.
I'll give you a card. Talking with?
Yeah, you probably don't.
Owen Brown was an abolitionist. John was Owen's son. He grew up in New England. He was born in Tarrington. John Brown was a tanner and a man of many skills. He stood up for the workers who toiled in the mills. He stood up for the Indians. He stood up for the women, for the oppressed and the exploited. This good man stood with them. So when Kansas was bleeding, he went and joined the fray. If the slave trade wanted Kansas, the slave trade would have to pay. Riding through the Kansas prairie with a fine and loyal band. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. With 2,000 of New England's best and bravest sons, Captain Brown fought in Kansas with a Bible and a gun. When Free Lawrence was on fire, lighting up the night, the ruffians would flee, John Brown would stand and fight. Lincoln called him a fanatic, and he was a Christian who thought you should do unto others as you'd have others do unto you. Christ said, love your neighbors, and if your neighbor's held in slavery, he was one who felt his duty was to fight to set them free. Riding through the Kansas prairie with a fine and loyal band. Glory, hallelujah. Beecher's Bible in his hand. Glory.
preacher's Bible in his hand. He drove the slave trade out of Kansas, then wrote to bordering Missouri. Raided the plantations, no compromise, said he. Broke the chains and shackles, rode at night to Canada. Out of the nightmare, the devil's home, America. He was caught in Harper's Ferry, his family lying dead. They questioned him for hours as he lay there and bled. They hanged him on the gallows, they laid him in his grave. John Brown was a Christian, and he died to free the slave. Riding through the Kansas prairie with a fine and loyal band. Glory, hallelujah, Beecher's Bible in his hand. Glory, hallelujah, Beecher's Bible in his hand.
And that was David Robix and his version of John Brown, which he also wrote. I think I played that one before. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Any calls or comments that you want to pass on to me about this show, you can call me on the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Particularly reports from the street about what you see happening outside in terms of how poor people are being treated or mistreated, as the case may be, or properly treated. I'd like to know about that. 423-4833. I also do a show on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, assuming I can get up that early. Getting a little sleepy these days.
I'm talking to a man who's chowing down on the strawberry pudding? I don't know what that is. I'm not quite sure.
Oats and cherries.
And what is it again?
Oats and cherries.
Oats and cherries. And you are sitting on a massage table, which I assume you are the expert of, or the man about, the worker on.
I'm okay. I get compliments.
But you're the man who does the massaging.
Yep.
Now, and how many massages do you do on a, I guess we're talking about a two-hour period between 4 and 6 on Saturday and Sunday?
It varies, honestly.
Okay. Let's say, what's the, give me the range.
At least one normally, sometimes nobody.
And is this what you do professionally?
No.
So this is sort of a hobby, so to speak.
Yeah.
And what do you do in your other life?
Not really. Well,
are you just an idler, a layabout, a wanderer, a TV watcher?
I could think we all are in a way, but no. I watch one show a week, I think.
Are you a student at the moment in the sense of...
I guess in my other life I'm trying to just learn about meeting my basic needs and then what's fundamentally going on in our culture.
Are you indoors or outdoors?
Currently indoors.
And is that difficult? Are you having trouble making the rent?
No. I get disability from the United States Navy that helps me pay the rent.
And what is the rent?
$850.
And that's for a, what, for a studio?
A room.
A room.
And a home.
And are you like located in the downtown area or...
I'm currently on the west side.
And you commute by bike, by foot, by bus?
Bike.
By bike. What have you, how long have you been around the area?
About 4 years.
Have you seen much in the way of changes here that you note?
More homeless people, but that might also be due to my involvement with homeless life.
How'd you get
having
involved?
Having been homeless.
How long were you homeless?
Never long. Just a couple months here and a couple months there.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yes.
What was your experience?
Other places. Well, it's varied. My experience was having good people and friends who took me in and cared for me or helped give me a hand so that I could get up off the streets, or also having the disability help me kind of out, but, you know, living on the streets and not being able to cook because I like to eat healthy or whatever, it was difficult and expensive.
How did you deal with...
I couldn't save money. It's psychologically, I feel defeating to not be able to work or to be able to participate in a way that's like, okay, I'm able to earn money towards something I want to grow or a direction I want to evolve and live my life in and dedicate myself to. Or not having a positive sense of community because you're maybe not involved or participating in life because you perhaps feel unable to or feel ashamed because you aren't able to really contribute. Or this is me subjectively.
Oh, yeah.
And also things that may apply to other people. But like it...
And were you sleeping outside?
Yes. For example, or in my car, I've been in a van, a car, and outside.
And did you get hassled for that?
On one occasion, but then I found other places to stay, and there were some worries being on that. Like, there's differences when you're in a car or a van or outside, but I guess what I was getting back to was kind of that active, I don't know, like, this gentleman, to me, my perspective is he doesn't have a positive outlet. So I feel for me, having a positive outlet, like a community in Aikido, that gave me a practice and some people, and that was something to cheer me up or give me an outlet. Whereas not having that, it makes it more frustrating and difficult because you don't have a way to channel your energies or focus yourself.
But the cops didn't hassle you at night when you were trying to rest.
I hid.
And did you? Were you apprehensive as you did this, or did you feel relatively confident?
I was apprehensive because there would be people partying and doing drugs across the way. I never got bothered, thankfully, and that's the grace of God and the good Lord for keeping me safe. And I think one of them was my friend, you know, like a... So I don't think I got bothered, you know, but... Because I had been helping out here at Food Not Bombs. It's like you meet people and you make friends.
Did you lose much of your property when you were outside? Or were
Fuck yeah, man. Like, you can't... Where are you going to keep it? Like, I mean, some people hang on to things, and, like, I was blessed. My friend, the third time around, Paul let me keep some stuff at his place. Like my guitar, so I could go and grab that during the day, and like I was worried about losing that.
Did you perform much?
No, I mean, I was learning and trying to take classes because I think at the same time, when you're in a position of losing everything, it's like, well, I want to grow. It's like that natural, I want to grow, I want to do this. So you're trying to, but then you don't maybe have a stable ground or support under you, and then you're like trying to get that going, but you don't have that. It's like my friend the other day was giving me an anecdote from his life of like how growing up he'd had a childhood at a very young age as a teenager, wound up dropping out of school because he committed to raising the child, but working, going to school, and raising the child, he couldn't do that, and his family wasn't helping with the child because he's got on his own at that point. So it's like I look at that maybe as a dynamic of when everything's not in play and you don't have your basics, it's hard to grow, but you want to grow, or at least for me this seems to be so. Because there's some drive or urge, but you don't have everything in place so you can start to do that. And I feel like having stable homes or a job can also
be things in place for you now.
I'm working towards that, and I'm getting help from people, which I'm grateful for. And I feel like volunteering is something that helps you meet people or like community to kind of get that going. Like that's how I got this table is through a friend I met volunteering, or got involved with this is through volunteering
with Norman
Keith. Yeah. You know, so it's along those lines. Volunteering has helped me make that community that's kind of hasn't done everything for me, but has done a lot for me as far as giving me tools and resources to use or things to need or opportunities. But I can also largely say to a great degree, me being homeless or fucked up or destitute and the situation I am is entirely my responsibility in a lot of my life. And the decisions and choices I made. Hey, Kim. But also, when you don't... I'm just talking in the thing. Oh, okay. I was just going to say when it's like everything's out of place, I feel like it's hard to make decisions when you feel like you're unsafe or in danger. And my mom pointed this out to me when I went home. I think it's true when I'm always having to think, like, okay, where am I going to sleep? Where am I going to eat? That's such a part of my conscious because my physiology, I don't want to fucking die. Then it's harder for me to think about a bigger picture or a larger thing in life. So it's like, I think Food Not Bombs is great and good for providing people with healthy food, maybe an outlet for people to talk to them. Because I think when you're living on the streets, it's such a hard environment to have a positive, mental, healthy outlook, or good people to talk to, it's harder to have a good conversation or maybe get some stuff off your chest. And I feel like good friends are a good thing in life that help us get some perspective and sanity.
And straight. And we've been talking with, if you wish to say,
Jesse Wilkins.
Thanks, Jesse.
And it's that lingering cold that tends to make me a little hoarse. And I hope you'll forgive the voice variation. Let's jump down now to Santa Ana Riverbed in Southern California. Here's a report from, about half a week ago.
Roberto has the new details.
Waiting for those details. Don't go away.
Santa Ana City Hall, a weekend hearing, and a federal judge. Rare circumstances to address a problem that can't wait. What is to become of the more than 600 people who were kicked out of a tent city along the Santa Ana River in Anaheim now that their 30-day motel vouchers are expiring?
The only option they were given was to go to shelters, and because of our clients' mental health, they cannot go to shelters. It's not medically appropriate for them.
Those were the types of concerns brought up during the hearing and helped shape the following agreement. The county will now extend motel vouchers for those with the most complicated needs and will also keep attorneys for the homeless posted on where they put people and give them a chance to challenge the placements if it isn't a good fit. The judge also invited 34 local cities to provide input.
Where we have successfully relocated folks from what was an unsustainable living situation, and we continue to look at next steps for those folks.
How do they know what we need if they don't ask us?
But Kim, who is homeless, wishes people like her were consulted. She worries despite all the legal wrangling, there isn't enough housing, and says after the encampments are cleared out, she's still homeless with nowhere to go.
We do need help. We need a lot of help out here. Not 2 years from now, 3 years from now. We need it now.
The county has also agreed to start moving people out of the motels in groups of 100. Some will also be given the option of going to drug rehab or medical facilities. In the meantime, county leaders say they plan to move forward with plans to clear out the homeless encampment that has been here for several years at Civic Center Plaza in Santa Ana. In fact, they said on Saturday that they are now working on a tentative date. In Santa Ana, Christy Fajardo, CBS 2 News.
A new plan tonight to show...
And we heard about that plan. And it's interesting to hear there is not just the Santa Ana Riverbed campers that have received some really serious attention, mainly because of sustained legal attorney support for them from attorneys Carol Sobel and others, and the attention of, I think his name is Carter, Judge Carter, federal judge, which I was reading about on this station either last Sunday or a week ago. But there's also this encampment in downtown Santa Ana at the Civic Center, and there are pictures of lots of tents, and it's been there for 2 years. Haven't heard much about it. I have heard about the San Diego encampment, which is really sort of a government-sponsored concentration area for campers in order to presumably scoot them away from other public spaces. Again, I haven't got a lot of direct reports from that. That's just my sneaking suspicion. That news report from CBS Los Angeles from a few days ago, judge holds rare Saturday hearing to work out housing for Orange County homeless displaced from the riverbed. It suggests that homeless folks, you know, are really fine except for those who are mentally disabled and or drug abusers. So that kind of covers the case. Again, this is the misrepresentation of the homeless population, which is, to a large extent, displaced residents. It's not people who were driven out of the streets because of difficulties necessarily or bad choices is the phrase that right-wingers often like to use. Although, you know, sure, those are involved. But the huge amount of the lack of housing, the high rents, the cost of medical insurance and ordinary medical care in spite of, Obamacare's deal with the insurance companies is a real factor here. The story has some more details. I'll read a little bit more of it. After a day-long hearing during a rare weekend session, a federal judge has ordered county and city leaders to work with homeless advocates to figure out how to house hundreds of transients displaced from the Anaheim riverbed last month. Again, the term transient is a typical loaded term. But U.S. District Judge David O. Carter presided over the Saturday hearing, which began at 9 a.m. and ended with Carter talking to individual homeless people well into the evening. The hearing concluded with an agreement between Orange County, Anaheim, and Santa Ana, and activists representing 700 homeless people temporarily housed in motels after the sweeps at the riverbed. The homeless persons affected were given 30-day motel and food vouchers in late February. These are set to expire within a week. So we're actually talking about the Santa Ana riverbed homeless, but there's another large group of folks who are the Santa Ana, apparently, Civic Center homeless. I'm not quite sure what their situation is. According to the agreement reached Saturday, those with vouchers will be relocated in groups of roughly 100, City News Service reported. Those still waiting to be transferred will be allowed to remain in their motels. Where we have successfully relocated folks from what was an unsustainable living situation, and we continue to look for next steps for these folks, said Anaheim spokesperson Mark Lister. The agreement also calls for the homeless living at the Santa Ana Civic Center, to be relocated to shelters. The County of Orange this week approved $2 million for additional shelter beds. And shelters are a none-too-happy solution, I'd like to remind folks. Usually you got to get kicked out during the day to wander around and face possible abuse on the streets. The county said it had enough beds for the riverbed homeless, a claim disputed by homeless activists. Judge Carter wanted to make sure the county did, in fact, have a place for the displaced before they left their motel rooms. How do they know what we need if they don't ask us? You heard that woman asking that question earlier in the TV interview, said one homeless woman. She was displaced from the riverbed encampment and warns and worries that even with all the legal wrangling, there isn't enough housing. We need a lot of help out here, not 2 years from now or 3 years from now. We need it now, as she said. Advocates will be able to challenge the new placements if they deem the locations unfit for the clients. The only option they were given was to go to shelters, and because of our clients' mental health, they cannot go to shelters. It's not medically appropriate. We heard this, too. The beds have to reflect the fact that not every homeless person has the same needs, and that some need emergency shelter, prominent Southland civil rights attorney Carol Sobel told CBS2. Some need medical care. Some need transitional shelter, like victims of domestic violence, to get back on their feet, and you have to have a system that accommodates all of that, Sobel echoed. The rare Saturday meeting came about after homeless advocates Thursday filed court papers asking for an extension of the motel vouchers. A hearing to figure out a long-term plan for the riverbed transients was originally scheduled for April 3rd. Attorneys for the homeless argued in Thursday's court filing that several transients were falsely told they had been denied further services and were being sent to shelters they deemed inappropriate. Orange County Board of Chairman Andrew Doe disputed claims the county may not have enough shelter for transients when they segue out of the motels. The county has at least that many beds in order to accommodate 530 people, Doe said. In January, the Orange County Catholic Worker Group and seven homeless people filed a lawsuit claiming a broad range of violations of constitutional protections by the governments of Orange County and the cities of Anaheim, Costa Mesa, and Orange regarding the removal of homeless from the riverbed. The lawsuit culminated in an unusual hearing on February 13th in Judge Carter's courtroom. That hearing turned into an hours-long negotiation session in which advocates and local officials reached a tentative deal on finding temporary shelter for the homeless living in the riverbed. The deal calls for, among other possible solutions, providing the homeless with month-long motel vouchers, adding beds to the homeless center in Anaheim, and erecting a tent in a fleet yard in Orange that can house up to 100 beds. The OC homeless crisis came to the forefront last September, that's Orange County, when the Anaheim City Council declared a state of emergency for the more than 400 people who had been living in a tent city in the shadow of Angel Stadium. That same month, the Santa Ana City Council also declared the homeless issue around the Santa Ana Civic Center a public health and safety crisis, while the OC Board of Supervisors approved a plan to increase law enforcement along the riverbed from Santa Ana to Anaheim. In November, Orange County permanently closed the west side of the flood control channel between Santa Ana and Fountain Valley. During the process, authorities reportedly found about 1,000 bikes hidden in a tunnel system under a concrete flood control channel. Deputies also began strictly enforcing public access hours along the Santa Ana River Trail. Access is only allowed between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Deputies have been slowly clearing the encampment since January, where they began going tent to tent along the Santa Ana River, telling people the area will be closed and they need to move. And here's a city official sounding off. I think this is what that is. Maybe it's not. Let's hear.
Orange County Sheriff's deputies are moving hundreds of homeless people out of the Santa Ana Riverbed today. But county leaders are now wrestling with the question, where do all these people go? CBS 2's Candace Cronin is live in Santa Ana with that. Candace, they do have a temporary fix, right?
Orange County Sheriff deputies went tent to tent telling hundreds of homeless people they have to leave.
Here, it's kind of like a whole, kind of like a family.
Amber Baird has been living along the Santa Ana Riverbed for the last year. She's one of many people that will either get a 30-day motel voucher or be placed in a shelter.
They're going to give us a hotel for 30 days, but what are we supposed to do within that 30 days? What are we going to do? Like, everybody's going to be back on the streets.
But it's a sad thing, but you get used to the people here. And now when you get split up, that's just, I guess you're on your own.
It's all part of a settlement between the county and homeless advocates, which went to federal court. The county wants to open biking and hiking trails on the riverbed to the public again. Supporters of the homeless wanted to make sure they didn't end up bouncing from city to city.
This will help you to know what really you should keep with you.
Donald Dermott, who works with the homeless through his church, handed out informational packets letting them know about their options.
There's a lot of lack of communication and different perceptions of what's actually going on. I've built relationships over the past years, and I'm here because I care.
This is a very slow-moving process because a lot of the homeless people haven't even decided what they're going to take. They haven't even started packing, so this is going to take quite some time. Also, we just learned that the judge who's supervising this process will be meeting with both sides tonight at 7 o'clock to get an update.
And, of course, unspoken is the fact that they have no place to move to. In fact, that some people with mental conditions, I guess they're determining that, I guess the shelters are going to become the supposed locus for people to be warehoused rather than dirty up the area along the scenic trails and the Santa Ana area. A lot of fluffy language is covering up some really nasty programs here, which are really move them out, move them on. Who cares what happens to them? So this story from the LA Times, written about the same meeting between Carter, the judge, and all these different city government employees and attorneys for the homeless, cover some more details. Orange County officials agree to extend motel stays on a case-by-case basis. We've already heard about that. Some of the additional facts are officials will share the locations of where they're sending people with advocates for the homeless 48 hours before the move, allowing attorneys enough time to challenge those moves if they feel they're not good fit for each individual. We have couples who need to stay together, but they're sent to places that separate couples. We have a few people who may be nearing the end of their lives, someone with stage 4 cancer. All of these folks have special needs, and we need want to be sensitive to them. Again, that's another statement from Carol Sobel. Then we have more here. Attorney Brooke Wiseman, who represents 7 homeless people and filed a civil rights lawsuit against Orange County in January over the clearing of the river encampment, argued in a court filing that the only shelter options available are the same ones that existed before. These include the bridges at Kramer Place in Anaheim, the courtyard in Santa Ana, and beds at private shelters. This leaves well more than 500 individuals relocated from the riverbed without shelter and competing with the additional 2,300 unhoused people in Orange County for the limited resources that exist, Weitzman wrote. And to find solutions, U.S. District Judge David Carter invited all parties to a hearing last Saturday, along with mayors, city managers from all of the Orange County's 34 cities, because homelessness, he said, is a countywide issue. Without appropriate resources, unsheltered individuals returning to the streets, sidewalks, plazas, and parks in the cities of Orange County could be at risk simply because of their homeless status, of being criminalized under anti-camping and anti-loitering laws, Carter wrote in the hearing invitation. And of course, that's the same situation that applies here in Santa Cruz. We have inadequate shelter or even the one campground area, the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground. As soon as the session opened, Carter pushed everyone to cooperate by helping to clean up the other homeless eyesore in Orange County, the controversial encampment at Santa Ana's Civic Center that ballooned to more than 500 residents last year and has now decreased to a population of about 200. Advocates say Carter worries that some people from the motels could end up at the Civic Center if there aren't enough beds for them at safer locations. One of these officials pledged to allocate up to $70 million in county funding to end the paralysis and tackle homelessness. Aha, promises, promises. However, Lily Graham, director of litigation for the Legal Aid Society of Orange County, said she continues to worry for her homeless clients. She has filed a lawsuit on behalf of the People's Homeless Task Force and Seven River Trail residents, alleging that the county's sudden eviction of these residents is discriminatory because it denies them access to county benefits because of their disabilities. The lawsuit maintains that Orange County has nearly $700 million in unspent funds available to end homelessness, including $146 million for housing vouchers, but officials show a lack of willingness to implement long-term solutions. There is so much uncertainty for our clients, Graham said. What happens after eviction and after the motels? There are no answers. That's, again, a story in the March 17th LA Times. Orange County officials agree to extend motel stays. And here's a story from Counterpunch website by writer Jeffrey St. Clair, one of the co-founders of that website. 2 years ago, a woman named Nicola Catone was arrested and taken to the police station in Schenectady, New York. While she was in police custody, two officers repeatedly slammed her head onto a bench, splitting open her scalp. An internal investigation into the incident released this week revealed that one of the officers, Lieutenant Mark McCracken, took photos of Catone's bloody head and shared them with fellow cops, boasting, "This is what happens when someone hits one of my men." In 2016, Terry Lee Morris was facing trial in Tarrant County, Texas, on charges of soliciting sex from a minor. During his appearance before Judge George Gallagher Morris, he was asked to enter his plea. Morris refused to answer. Before Judge George Gallagher, Morris was asked to enter his plea. Morris refused to answer, saying that he wanted the judge to recuse himself on the grounds he was biased against Morris. The judge became infuriated and told Morris to stop making outbursts in his courtroom or, quote, "I will use the shock belt on you." Morris, like most defendants in Gallagher's court, had been strapped with a stun belt capable of delivering a 50,000-volt charge for 8 seconds. The belts are marketed as a precautionary device meant to immobilize violent defendants. Morris repeated his request that Gallagher remove himself from the case, whereupon the judge turned to the bailiff and said, "Hit him." The bailiff pressed the button, jolting Morris with 50,000 volts of electricity, enough to cause excruciating pain and seizures. Again, the judge asked the writhing Gallagher if he was going to follow the rules. Gallagher exclaimed he was being tortured just for making a legal request. The judge instructed the bailiff to hit him again. This week, the Texas Court of Appeals threw out Gallagher's conviction, ruling that the barbaric actions of the judge violated his constitutional rights. I guess it means Morris's conviction. The judicial torturer, however, remains on the bench. ICE agents tracked a 10-year-old girl, Rosa Marie Hernandez, with cerebral palsy, who has lived here since she was three, to a hospital where she underwent emergency gallbladder surgery and arrested her at the hospital afterwards. She is now being held in an ICE prison. Last August, Johnny Germain Rush was crossing the street shortly after midnight near the local baseball stadium in Asheville, North Carolina, when he was accosted by two police officers, one of whom, Verino Ruggiero, was a trainee. Rush was on his way home from his job as a dishwasher at the nearby Cracker Barrel. The encounter that followed was captured on the body camera of the other cop, Officer Chris Hickman. Ruggiero approached Rush and shouts, "You didn't use the crosswalk four times in a row." "All I'm trying to do is get home, man," Rush responds. "I'm tired. I just got off work." "I've got two options," Ruggiero threatens. "I can either arrest you or write you a ticket." Rush seemed to resign himself to the absurdity of the situation. "It doesn't matter, man," he says. "Do what you got to do. Besides, keep harassing me, man." At that point, Ruggiero's partner, Chris Hickman, orders Rush to put his hands behind his back and prepares to cuff him. Then Rush takes off with the cops in pursuit. They soon tackle him and pin him to the ground, where he is tasered, beaten, and choked to the point where Rush screams in pain and yells out, "I can't breathe." After the incident, a police supervisor arrived on the scene. Rush tried to explain what happened, but the supervisor kept interrupting him, saying, "You're lying, you're lying. My officer would not do that." The supervisor refused Rush's pleas to view the body cam footage. When they got back to the station, the cops piled up the charges, citing the beaten man with impeding traffic, second-degree trespassing, assaulting a government official, and resisting a police officer. The police video of the brutal encounter was uncovered earlier this week by the Asheville Citizen-Times, prompting widespread outrage in the city and the resignation of Officer Hickman. MSDNC used to cover these horrific abuses in some detail. No room now with wall-to-wall Russiagate coverage. There's actually an audio of that, which, you got to hear me read it instead.
Outdoor seating areas of all the trendy new cafes, you can see the yuppies drinking their cortados and lattes. You can hear them as they're chatting and laughing out so loud. Must feel good to be in the in crowd. Must feel good to have such idle conversation about the latest 1980s Spotify compilation. Yeah, I got myself a phone, but the battery is spent, 'cause there isn't any outlet to plug into in this tent. On the sidewalk, on the sidewalk, listen to them talking, the lawyers and ITs. Sometimes I really wonder if I'm a member of their species. But I grew up in this city, now I can't afford to live here. Can't afford to spend $10 on a pint of beer. Can't afford to lie down on a bench and take a nap. I'm lucky if they let me in to use the John take crap. Don't write me a letter, there's nowhere to get it sent, 'cause you don't have an address when you're living in a tent. On the sidewalk, on the sidewalk. Often when I'm downtown selling papers, I see protesters protesting the powers that be. Maybe I should join them, but I don't think I will, because whoever runs the Congress or Capitol Hill, the only thing that changes, whoever's hands are in the larder. Everything gets more expensive, life keeps getting harder. The one and only thing that matters is I can't afford the rent. The sky is pissing, freezing rain, the walls are leaking in this tent. On the sidewalk, on the sidewalk. I lay here on the plastic, shivering away. I'm just hoping that I'll make it to the break of day. Not just be a statistic who died face down in the mud, beaten by some frat boys covered up in blood. Sometimes I dream I have a future, an end to this long night. Sometimes I dream that someday people will have rights. But when I wake up, I wonder what the hell that meant, 'cause I'm sure there is no future
here inside this tent on the sidewalk. On the sidewalk.
And there was a song by David Rovics on the sidewalk commemorating Portland's dead in Portland, Oregon, published on January 12th. I think I played it a couple of months back, but you just heard it again.
Okay, well, today is March 19th, 2018. It's around 7:30, and I'm talking with
Valerie.
And Valerie, you've been playing at the Red Church on occasion, and I guess you were there tonight at the meal at the Calvary Episcopal Church.
Yes, I was.
And how long were you there?
Let's see, I got there at 4, and I was there, God, until almost 7 o'clock talking to people.
And were there a lot of people there tonight?
No. There was a long line all the way to the back, though, when the food came, but there wasn't a whole lot. You know, sometimes it looks crowded inside the building, but it wasn't raining and cold, so you know, nobody needed to come in and listen to music or anything. If they didn't want to, they could be outside because the weather was okay.
Now, can people come between 4 and 7? Was it just a lot of in and out?
Usually it's 5 to 6, and then the meal is 6 to 7. So I go in at 4 because I go in there and start practicing with the music people.
And how many fellow musicians did you have?
Let's see. We had about, well, not including John, who's the one who sets everything up, about 3 other people were with me. So us 4, 5 altogether, I guess.
And who were these musicians?
Oh, actually, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, but the 5th one turned out to be Ricardo, who, as far as I know, has never played, but he wanted to play along with me.
Ricardo Lopez?
Yeah. Yeah, so he joined in and played. We did, I think we were doing Everyday People or one of those ones, a Love Train. He goes, oh, yeah, that one. And I said, come up here and play with me. So he did, and he came and played along.
Now, Ricardo is an occasional player outside the Palomar at night, right?
I guess that's where he hangs out. Yeah, I haven't seen him there. But
I think there's Jay and a couple of other folks.
Yeah, Jay plays out there, and of course Val and Lee, who play at the Red Church, they came later around 6.
So, what happened between 5 and 6?
Played around. I played music, and we were playing stuff together.
I mean, in the past, under Father Joel Miller, who is no longer the pastor there, there was you would have visits and kind of guest speakers. Occasionally there'd be a service of some kind. Did you notice anything like that happen?
Yeah, it's kind of broke up now, but MH Can people come in sometimes and tell stories about their experiences of being homeless. Also, they are real supportive of MH Can, and they say, come on down, you can get on the computer for free. Sometimes there's meals, there's different kind of things, so they're always like kind of commercially, you know, letting people know that they could come and hang out there too.
Were they there today?
No, there wasn't any stories, so we pretty much musicked it up most of the time. So it was kind of fun.
And what, people were free to come and go?
Yeah, you can free to walk in and out. You can't hang out from the outside of the door and the lawn and that area, so you have to either be inside or on the sidewalk.
Well, I know that also once you start to eat, Steve, who's the bouncer, stops you from taking plates of food outside.
Oh, well, I haven't seen too many people trying to do that, but I had heard that. Yeah, that guy has got this rule. His job is to repeat over and over again, you can't stand outside the door. You gotta go over to the sidewalk. You can't walk, stand in the yard. You can't, you know, hang out in that area at all. And he just keeps on coming up. I keep forgetting. So, oh, thanks, I forgot, you know. And I mean, I thank him because we even have a chance to use the church. I mean, if they gotta have stupid rules, well, that's the way it goes. I mean, that's my opinion. It's a stupid rule.
I don't know why
rule,
they would have to have stupid rules. I don't think they should.
No,
I think it's abusive and an insult to people who are trying to bring food out to people who can't come in, let's say for different reasons, because of disabilities or weariness or whatever.
Yeah.
You don't want to have to stand in line for long periods of time to wait for food because they have a trouble doing that.
Yeah.
So, you also, when you came and approached me earlier today, you showed me a flyer that was given out by Brent Adams.
Yeah, Brent came about 6, right when everybody was in line to catch the meal. And he said that they've got the Salvation Army open tonight because it's raining. And especially, he calls it extreme rain. We're supposed to have a really bad rain. So they've got a warming center open for the next 3 days. And one of them's going to be at the Calvary, which will be tomorrow, that church where we were at. And
the red church.
Yeah, the red church there, yeah. So there are going to be people sleeping on the floor right there.
So now, is this thing tonight part of the winter shelter, part of the 20-person Association of Faith Communities, or independently part of the warming center that Brent does?
He said that it was the warming center.
And the reason that's different is because I think his rules are much looser than those of these other places.
Well, that's what was interesting was some of the homeless people interrupted. One of them said, can you come in at 2 o'clock in the morning? And he said, oh, yeah, you can come in at 2. It doesn't matter what time of the night it is. And I thought that was a nice thing, too. I was like, all right, because, you know, sometimes you're just out. You know, you got other things you're doing, and you might be hanging out singing on the street or something, and you want to work play until 2. You know, who knows?
And did Brent tell you anything else that you thought was of interest?
That's pretty much it. I was just really happy. And then there was he came up to me and started telling me and the other people were with me that a man was all ready to go off in the north to go to his land to work. And he had a big, big backpack. And he was all set. And he was on, I think he was on Pacific Avenue, but I'm not sure about that. And a white van came driving up and took his pack. He just sat it down for a minute. And I said, well, it had to be someone who knew him or something. He says, it could be somebody who's, like, against homeless who might have tried to steal it for that.
Parks and Rec thought he was dawdling.
I don't know. But anyway, everybody was helping him. There was somebody had given him a empty frame pack, and he was all ready to fill it. And Brent was going, what do you need? A blanket, a sleeping bag? And so he was trying to help him get his stuff together so he could head out because he was ready to go. He was going to head out tonight.
Now, Steve Plaich of the Homeless Persons Legal Assistance Project, or so it's called, was he there?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Did he make any announcements or comments?
No, but he was grooving on my music I was singing. That was fun watching him.
He and Brent get into a fist fight?
Oh, no.
That's good. They've not always been. No. But they've not always been the best of friends.
Oh. Well, it's hard to be friends with Brent because he's so moody and, you know, kind of judgmental. But I told him tonight, I said, thanks for being a lot less judgmental. And when you get interviewed by Robert, you're just telling your thing and everything. You guys are getting along. And I said, I'm happy you're doing that, you know. But I think he's learning, you know, that sometimes just being, you know, too verbal and attacking other people is just not going to make it any better for him. And he's mellowing out, which is good. Because I think that he needs to do solidarity. It doesn't matter if he doesn't agree with them. He just needs to have some kind of solidarity of support with each other instead of just yelling at each other, you're not right, you're not doing your thing. You know, I don't like that attitude, and I'm happy that he's changing.
I notice he's been very helpful, I think, as far as communicative of information in the last few months as we've interviewed him, or I've interviewed him. You said that there was also some reports about new conditions or problems at the River Street campground, what's called the Boneyard. I call it the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground up River Street, where you have to get shuttled in and shuttled out, and which are, the tents are very, very close to each other. And it has it's the first ever city's campground in terms of specifically city-sanctioned and funded campground. And they do provide some shuttle service, but they've said you can't walk in and out of that. Although there was some talk of changing the rules after a month or two or looking them over again. Although I haven't been able to reach anybody up there in terms of any reports from either Chris Monteith or Jennifer or worker Sea Otter, any of these people. Was there any reports on anything from River Street?
Just a little bit, but I know a person who works there. He's a friend of mine. And he said there was, it sounded like he said some kind of rumor, I don't know if it's true or if it's just talk, that they may, they were considering not making that shuttle thing a big tight rule, you know, maybe not have it or maybe lighten up on it. It was kind of like the conversation kind of cut off, so I didn't get to hear any details. So, but I really thought it was interesting that they were considering it, and I think it would be good. Because I think people should be free to come in and out. They feel there's a complaints about feeling like it's a prison.
Did you hear any of those complaints This evening?
Yeah, Sharon, you know, the gal that works there as a volunteer, she used to be at Dignity Village, and she said it really should be more like Dignity Village, and she said that...
That's in Portland.
Yeah, she was part of helping that keep that. She said she was one of the main people there, in fact, and she said that it should be... She was complaining that the people that were working outside had guns. First alarm. And my friend who works there says, no, they don't carry guns. And so she...
There is a police station across the street, a mobile police van.
Right, yeah, there is some...
He I said suspect they carry guns.
It's kind of to protect if anybody wants to come in there and mess up, walk in and mess up the place. They want to be protective of the people that are inside. Just like anywhere, if you have a home, you wouldn't mind if somebody, you know, was like, you know, helping
did
you.
Did somebody tell you? Are this your theory, or did they tell you this? Or?
Well, that's what I'm hearing from the guy who works there. That you know, it's they're basically trying to make sure that the people are safe, that nobody's going to hurt them, and that's what I'm hearing. And I'm hearing that they're not. They're mostly doing it to support them.
It sounds unlikely because if you remember the San Lorenzo campground. Which had more people. It also had people who were into hard drug use. It had, you know, it was for a longer period of time. It wasn't fenced off behind barbed wire, and so they had Parks and Rec rangers there with some regularity, but they did not have a police substation nearby armed with guns. In fact, and they didn't have a rule about not being able to walk up and walk away, and they didn't have curfews there. This seems to me rather like regulations where they're treating homeless people as dangerous beasts or people that need to be domesticated in some way that aren't really quite civilized and really have to be kept in line. So I don't know what fantasy this person is who told you this. Maybe one of the workers who wants to get on the good side of the management. Look at it in a positive...
Not having a reaction. He just doesn't have a reaction, that feeling about it. I hear some grumbles about people feeling like they're kind of closed in. It's locked. I think it's kind of jail-like, and you are free to leave, but it's kind of like, you know, it's overly controlled. But, you know, it seems like everywhere, you go into a theater, everything's so controlled nowadays. It's like everything is so, you got to go over there and make sure all this safety, there's over-safety stuff. And I think that it's wrong because the people do get belittled in kind of like they're children that we need to take care of instead of adults that are responsible unless they prove they're not. And I agree with you about that, so I am against it and hope that they can do less of that. I'd like to see a lot more camps opening up. I agree with you. You were saying on your show that you thought that we should have more little camps instead of more like a bigger camp because it's harder to keep a big camp together. And little camps gives people a chance, but it should not be locked like that. I'm very against that.
Now, you've been going out to the Red Church with some regularity, at least more than one weekend, or more than one Monday.
Well, kind of about 4 weeks now. I've just gone over there on Mondays.
Now, in the past, you haven't really liked going there, but have you changed your mind about that? Why is that?
Oh, just because there hasn't been a lot of music. I've been supportive because I have a friend there that likes to play and hang out there, and he said that we needed more musicians. One of the people that play there's less of them, they're not there as much, or they're out there at the end of the time, 6 o'clock. So I just come in and help out a little bit, add more music.
What instrument do you play?
Ukulele. I used to play the guitar, but it's lighter and easier to carry around.
And no doubt you'll be playing some more numbers for Free Radio in the future.
I can do that anytime. In fact, sometime I'm hoping to play a homeless song for you or something on your show.
So. You have something you've composed?
Well, I should work on the ukulele. I've played it on the guitar, but I need to work on it. It would be nice to do again my song about the man with the cardboard sign, which is basically an understanding, a portrait of a person sitting there, a regular old person going, how did I end up on the street with a cardboard? You know, how does that happen? Kind of feeling, looking at that, going, I was just a regular person, and now I'm nobody. I'm considered nobody. And it's a good song about people's experience, so I like it.
Now, have you been downtown much at all?
Yeah, I've been downtown a little.
Have you seen anything on the streets that caught your attention that you wanted to mention?
No, just some music. I've been playing music a little bit. sometimes it's so quiet and dead, and I've talked to people on the street about how it's changed so much, and we really feel it's because the rules have really scared a lot of people away. So it's sad because it's really kind of dead a lot down there, and it's really, it used to be such a lively place. I've been here over 30 years, and it's changed a lot. Yeah. And I really think it's because of the laws.
Anything you'd like to add?
I don't think so.
We've been talking with?
Valerie.
Thank you, Valerie.
Thanks, Robert.
And a couple of quick announcements before I go. On Saturday, there's a number of events. End Solitary Confinement in Santa Cruz County. It's, I presume it's across the state. It's from 12 noon to 2 p.m. And that's downtown in front of the surf shop at 112 Cooper at Cooper and Pacific. There'll be a street party on the same day for International Women's Day 2018 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence, 612 Ocean Street. That's going to start at 1 and go until 4. All you can eat, soup and bread, but it costs $7. Maybe they'll let you in if they, maybe if you're a woman, they'll let you in. Who knows? And also at the Resource Center for Nonviolence on Saturday from 2 to 4, March 24th, a rent control teach-in in Santa Cruz County for